Good afternoon, and welcome to 21st Century Holding Company second quarter 2012 financial results conference call. My name is Saeed, and I will be your operator today. Please note that today's call is being recorded. At this time, all participants are in listen-only mode. Later, we will conduct a question-and-answer session. If you'd like to ask a question at that time, please press star then one on your touchtone telephone. Callers should limit their questions to allow others time as well, but may reenter the queue with additional questions. Statements in this conference call that are not historical fact are forward-looking statements without limiting the generality of the foregoing words such as may, will, expect, believe, anticipate, intend, would, could, estimate, or continue, or the negative, other variations thereof. Comparable terminology are intended to identify forward-looking statements. The matters discussed on this call that are forward-looking statements are based on current management expectations and involving risks and uncertainties that may result in these expectations not being realized. Actual events, outcomes, and results may differ materially from what is expressed or forecasted in forward-looking statements made on this call due to numerous risks and uncertainties, including but not limited to the risks and uncertainties described in this conference call, our press release issued today, and other filings made by the company with the SEC from time to time. Forward-looking statements made during this presentation speak only as of the date of which they are made, and 21st Century Holding Company specifically disclaims any obligation to update or revise any forward-looking statements to reflect new information, future events, or circumstances, or otherwise. Now, at this time, I would like to turn the conference over to Mr. Michael Braun, Chief Executive Officer and President of 21st Century Holding Company. Please go ahead, sir.
Good afternoon, and thank you for joining us to discuss 21st Century Holding Company's second quarter 2012 financial results. I'm joined on the call by Pete Pajelski, our Chief Financial Officer. Our financial results for the quarter can be found in our earnings press release. I will go over some brief highlights from the quarter, and then Pete and I will open up the line for questions. Second quarter net income improved to $1.4 million, or $0.18 per share for the second quarter 2012, compared with $1.1 million or $0.13 per share for the first quarter 2012, and a net loss of $800,000 or $0.10 per share in the second quarter 2011. Net income for the 2012 six-month period improved to $0.31 per share, compared with a net loss of $0.35 per share in the same six-month period last year. Book value increased to $7.89 per share at June 30th, 2012, compared with $7.61 per share at March 31st, 2012, and $7.05 per share at June 30th, 2011. Gross written premiums increased by $5.1 million or 18.1% compared with the same three-month period last year. Net premiums earned increased by $3 million or 26% compared with the same three-month period last year. Homeowners policy count has grown from 43,793 at the start of 2012 to 52,908 at June 30th, 2012, or 20.8%. Our continued focus on writing sustainable quality business and controlling expenses has led to another profitable quarter. The growth in our policy count, gross written premium, and net earned premiums are notable after tightly controlling our book of business over the prior two years. While we have taken a prudent path towards growth, we feel these decisions have set the course for future success. With that, we are glad to open up the call to your questions.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen on the phone line, if you have a question at this time, please press star then one on your touchtone telephone. Again, if you have a question at this time, please press star then one. First question comes from Casey Alexander from Gilford Securities.
Hi, Casey. How are you today?
I'm fine, thanks. I have a couple questions. One, was there a single event on the net realized loss for the quarter, the investment loss?
Casey, this is Pete Pajelski. What specific number are you looking at?
There's the $218,000 net realized investment loss for the quarter.
No, there was no single one event. I don't know, you haven't been on the call in a while, but I don't know, we've outsourced a lot of the equity. That would be all equities, the $200,000 loss, and we've outsourced the management of our equity portfolio to three different equity managers and three different asset classes, and that was just normal selling on their part.
Okay, that's fine. Secondly, I'm a little curious about the minus 44% loss ratio in the commercial general liability business. Was there like a clawback of a previous claim that was made, or how did that come about?
I'll answer that one too, Casey. Basically, what we did in the second quarter is we looked at our total IBNR for all lines. CGL had been performing better than expected. We reallocated some of our incurred but not reported reserves from CGL over to property. So you could see property went up 5%, and CGL, which didn't have much earned premium, went down dramatically because it was almost moving $2 to $3 million over to property and removing it from CGL. So it's probably more helpful to look at it on the total basis of all lines combined. But that money wasn't, so to speak, it was a clawback. It was, you know, so you're not seeing that $2 or $3 million that was taken out of CGL purely reflected in the earnings, because it was almost, we took it from CGL and moved it over to property.
And Casey, this is Mike. I'll give you some more color on that. In the past, years ago, we used to sell our general liability through general agents, and that has led to, in the past, higher loss ratios. Bringing that back in-house has dramatically lowered loss and LAE on that program. And with time, you saw the ultimates of that come down. I would anticipate that you might see in the mid to upper 50s on an ongoing basis on that program.
Okay. All right. That explains it. Great. Thank you.
Thank you.
Yep.
Thank you. Our next question comes from William Myers from Miller Asset Management.
Hi, William. How are you today?
Good. And congratulations on the quarter and the continuing good trend. You have a lot of cash at this point, and you've been in the black for a few quarters now. And I can't see anything to criticize, but I was hoping you could give me some insight as to, since we are in the wind season, what does happen? What are the scenarios if there is a hurricane that hits Florida? In just in broad strokes, are we looking at possibly losing a quarter's worth of earnings? Are we looking at, what would be, in the best general terms that you can describe, the immediate and long-term financial results of actually being hit by a hurricane? Hopefully that won't happen.
Sure. Bill, in that regard, we've got some experience in terms of handling hurricanes. What we have is on our reinsurance program is an $8 million retention. Just real rough math, $8 million after tax, let's say it's around $5 million. The capital in our insurance company is approximately, statutory surplus is approximately $46 million. So taking an event with that full retention would bring us to $41 million. We have ample capacity to continue our book of business at that point. If there was a second event and we had another $5 million event after tax based on the $8 million retention, you could argue that perhaps the surplus is at $36 million. Once again, that is more than adequate to support our existing book of business. In the most recent quarter, a storm did come through, and it was pretty minor, but you're talking that storm is probably around the $400,000 range. So we have cover up into approximately $233 million. In terms of $233 million, all the storms that we've been through over the years, and the big ones that the one that predates us as a company, we've run those through our models, and really none of them pierce $100 million. So here we are with about approximately $233 million of cover, and the prior storms all the way back in 2004 and 2005, you'll see that we paid out a total of over $350 million of CAT claims. So that's why we buy a lot of reinsurance, and that's why it's critical that we have good reinsurance partners. So we believe we're prepared for that.
Okay, so let me just repeat that back to you in my terms. So because of the reinsurance, in effect, when you are booking profits, you've kind of already had, by paying reinsurance, you've paid most of the expense of any possible storms. So the profits that you book in any given quarter are solid, and in effect, you've really prepaid for any possible storm damage. That's the idea
yeah.
here.
Yeah, what we have is we have two different reinsurance programs that we have in place. So we have it through the private market and through the state, which is the FHCF. But let's just assume for simple math it's $40 million. So overly simplistic, we're, you know, base, you could say that we're expensing $10 million a quarter. So any loss above our retention really would not hit us as providing we have the reinsurance recovery.
Okay. Well, that is reassuring. Happy to hear that answer, and hopefully your good results will continue. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you. Our next question comes from Doug Roth from Lennox Financial.
Hi, Doug. How are you today?
I'm doing well. Congratulations on a very good quarter.
Thank you.
Could you talk to us about this, your book of business and why it's better now than it's been in the past?
It's significantly improved over the last 2, 3, 4 years in terms of what we do. The CGL, I spoke on that briefly a few minutes ago, bringing that underwriting in-house has made that book a much better quality book of business. It's a smaller book than it was 5 years ago, but our focus is not on top line gross written. Our focus is on the bottom line net earnings. So that book has improved significantly over the years with good underwriting. The other book of business, the much larger book of business that we have is Florida Property, and I would say that our analytics on Florida Property is very good, and our underwriting is very good, and I think our claims handling is very good. So not only have we diversified our business throughout the state, approximately 24% of our business is in the Tri-Counties, which is in the South Florida area. The book continues to perform well. We've got very good agents all across the state that continue to give us quality business. I think we have a very good programs in place from inspection of properties upon underwriting, the modeling of it. So it's a quality book of business that we think is sustainable in the long run to generate what it needs to do.
That sounds terrific. Can we talk a little bit about what the company and the board is thinking about as far as a stock buyback? The stock is still trading at a significant discount to its equity, and then the either a stock buyback or a dividend.
Yeah.
Working with a lot of retired people who could really use dividends.
Yeah, and Doug, that's a great question. We clearly know the desire for a dividend. We know that value. Part of our hesitation has been when we merged the two carriers about a year and a half ago, I think it was January of 11, one of the things we agreed to do was not have a dividend until we've had two consecutive quarters of an underwriting profit. Well, here we are, 4 quarters out with an underwriting profit. So while we're legally allowed in that regard to have that dividend, one of the things is I'll be visiting with the OIR over the next few months to have a conversation with them just to confirm that they're in agreement of where we're at. The board clearly understands the value of the dividend, and I think that having 4 quarters of not only a profit but an underwriting profit lend to that argument. So I'm confident that the board will review that on a go-forward basis, and we want to return value to our shareholders.
Yeah, that would be very beneficial. Could you talk a little bit more about what's happening with the name change and what the benefits would be for the policyholders and the shareholders?
Yeah, that's we have the proxy out there to all of our shareholders, and 21st Century Holding Company is not a name that we really use, and I think it's really irrelevant in terms of what we do with our policyholders and our agents. Is we operate under the name Federated National. So I think it only makes sense to change the name from 21st Century Holding Company to Federated National Holding Company, which is much more consistent with our insurance company, Federated National Insurance Company. I think it goes a long way. So that proxy is out there, and people are voting on that, and I encourage people to support that before our September 11th shareholder meeting.
Okay. And my last question is if you could just talk a little bit about what's happening with Citizens.
Sure. Citizens has a new president, and He has repeatedly stated that they're looking to downsize it. They're at approximately 1.5 million policies. I think their underwriting has gotten significantly tougher over the last year, is what I hear from in the marketplace from the agents. So I'm confident they don't want to grow, and I'm as confident that they want to shrink. I personally believe Citizens should be in the ballpark of maybe 250,000 to 500,000 policies. There's clearly certain risks that are non-insurable for any number of reasons. As you see from our policy count, we've grown significantly in the first 6 months of this year, and as we sit here in the first week of August, that pace is not slowing down. So I think that the private market, there's definitely demand out there. And as I've said in the past, it's not difficult to write business in Florida. There's plenty of business to write. The trick is writing it profitably year after year. We bit the bullet in the last 2 years, in 10 and 11, and did a lot of non-renewals, and that really hampered us short term. However, I absolutely believe it was the right thing to do, and I think you're going to see the positive effects from that on a go-forward basis.
We're grateful that you're focusing on profitability instead of just a pure policy count. Thank you again. It was a beautiful report.
Thank you, Doug.
Thank you. Our next question comes from David Spear from Mineral Capital.
Hi, David. How are you?
Hey, how are you?
Great.
You mentioned on the previous question, I believe it was Doug, that you're meeting with the OIR about a dividend. I think you've been profitable now 4 quarters in a row. Do you actually need their permission?
We do not need their permission. When we merged the two companies in January of 11, we agreed that no dividend would be paid until we had two consecutive quarters of an underwriting profit. I'm the one that's requesting the meeting, and I think the merger was a fantastic success.
Yeah.
And I don't think that anyone would disagree with us, including the OIR. But I think it's prudent to share our plans with the OIR and make sure that they're in agreement. I don't anticipate a problem from that, but I think it's the right thing to do.
And, out of curiosity, this dividend, do you plan on, eventually going forward being a situation where after the hurricane season ends, you're going to send out a special dividend, or is this plan a quarterly dividend, something like HCAI puts out? Just wondering, what type of plan is anticipated.
Sure. Well, I think the most value that people see is a consistent dividend that they can count on quarter to quarter, and we clearly understand that. I think if we there's opportunities where you can form a captive, and basically a captive, you can take additional risk in your retention, and that can generate an additional special one-time dividend, and you may see that in the marketplace with some of our competitors. So it is additional risk that you can take, and if it's storm-free, it enables you to do a special dividend. That's something that we may look at in the future, but that's a separate item. I think that I think there's a lot of value to be said for a consistent dividend on a quarter-to-quarter basis.
Yeah, definitely agree. And in terms of the rates, do you see rates increasing from here on as they have in the past couple of years, or you think they're about to stabilize at this point?
Well, I think that the shock of the mitigation credits and the shock of the rollback of a lot of things that we had to do in years past has mostly passed. We had some significant rate increases of 19 and 20%. I don't believe you're going to see us with, barring something unusual, I don't think you're going to see us with double-digit increases like that. Right now, we have a rate pending of approximately 9%. I think that's going to be approved. I don't know what amount. I would say in the 5 to 10% range, it may be approved. That's subject to the regulatory approval. Now, how does that compare with the industry? I think that our rates are very competitive. You may see in the news that some of the big national carriers are pushing for some pretty significant rate increases. You're seeing Citizens is just recently put in a rate increase of approximately 8.5%. They're on what's called a glide path, and that varies by territory, but no single territory of theirs can go up by more than 10%. So I think the shock of what happened in the marketplace is over, where you saw significant rate increases we had about a 50% rate increase back in 06,
yeah.
which led to an overreaction of the expansion of the FHCF and perhaps mitigation credits. So then our rates went down sharply, and then they phase out the FHCF, and the challenges of mitigation credits are fully realized, and our rates go back up. That volatility was not helpful to anyone, and I think that the volatility is no longer there, and that you're going to see much more stable rate structure.
Right, because that's really what my question was gearing towards in terms of the fact, are we going to see a normalization in the environment? Because, you know, if so, I think that's, you know, a big catalyst there, moving your stock above book value, whereas right now you're trading at a discount of book value, and I think it just, you know, has entirely to do with just the uncertainty with the industry. And I think right now in the current time, there seems to be, you know, from an onlooker standpoint, a lot of certainty in the business. And I was just wondering, going forward, do you see that as being the case, that this is a normalized environment and a profitable environment right now?
Sure. I'm very encouraged where we're at. I think not only is the environment much better than it was back 3-4 years ago from a political perspective, but also financially. We have great reinsurers on our program. They're all solid, and we buy from the FHCF, which is more liquid than they've ever been, and I think it's much more standard of a normal environment. But we remain committed and focused on writing profitable business. I have no problem telling you that we could write a lot more business than we're writing. We reject the majority of the business that comes in does not get written because of our underwriting process. So regardless of what the future may hold, we're confident that we need to underwrite soundly, policy by policy. You mentioned Citizens, I believe. We don't see doing a depop of Citizens. I mean, the quality of writing business individually, one at a time, underwriting that and visiting the property, I think there's a lot to be said for that.
And last one, I'm going to get off. But is there a timetable when we can see an announcement regarding, you know, the meeting with the OIR or a dividend that we can reasonably expect here?
Well, I don't anticipate putting out a press release after meeting with the OIR. Once again, there's not a problem. This is just a courtesy meeting that I'm requesting of the OIR, and I would anticipate that that's going to be really the hurricane season here. We go into September, October, November in that ballpark. But I can assure you that we are well aware of the desire for a dividend. And immediately, if the board makes a decision, we'll get information out to that effect. But I don't want to mislead you and tell you that this is going to be something that's coming out that's certain. It's not. It's going to be a courtesy meeting that we have with the OIR, and then we as a board are going to discuss it. But once that decision is made, that will be made public. We'll make that available public immediately.
Okay, great. I appreciate it. Thanks. Hope for good news out of it. Have a good one.
Thank you.
Thank you. Our next question comes from Samir Khari from Capital Returns Management.
Hi, Samir. How are you today?
Good. How are you doing?
Great.
I apologize if you guys covered this. I had some technical difficulties earlier and had to dial in again. But I was hoping you can go over some of the rate increases you guys have been able to get to date and any pending rate increases or rate changes, rather, that you have in the pipeline.
Sure. I'm going to be brief on that, Samir, because I did speak a little bit more at length.
Okay. Sure.
But basically, we do have an 8.5%, about 9% rate filing pending with the OIR. I anticipate that should get approved in the fall here. I can't say for certain, obviously, but it's the shock of the big rate increases. I think that's something that is behind us, not only for us as a carrier, but the industry as well.
Okay. And can you also talk about some of the cost-cutting initiatives you have in place?
Yeah, you know, I think that we have a great infrastructure in place that we can very easily grow from and write more business on. I think that Pete and I, the whole management team and the board, prides ourselves on our operations. I think we do a quality job with our underwriting, with everything that we do, but for our insurers and for our agents, our claims handling. So I think that really the objective is to maintain, to be diligent on our expenses at all time, but we really see the opportunity. We clearly have that in our culture here where we contain expenses. What we see is a great opportunity for us to grow, and you're seeing significant increases in our growth, not only in this quarter, but year to date. And right now, as we sit here in the first week of August, that's staying pretty steady. So I think that's where you're going to see an upside. As we grow, the infrastructure doesn't grow at the same rate. A lot of those fixed expenses are the most expensive policies are the first ones we write. Adding additional ones is not really the way we control variable expenses are much less costly.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Our next question comes from Ron Bobman from Capital Returns.
Hi, Ron. How are you?
Good, gentlemen. Thanks a lot. I had a couple of sort of assorted questions. Commission income, could you remind me, is that like sort of reinsurance brokerage commission income or something else?
No. That we have an in-house agency that's very small. There's a where we have it's called InsureLink, where we do write third-party products, and then also we have our MGA where we write third-party products as well. So I believe that's what you're seeing. Yeah.
Okay. Then I had a question. I think if I heard Michael correctly in the prepared remarks, I think Debbie was the name Storm, and you mentioned $400,000. Obviously relatively small, very small. But if I strip out the $400,000 of losses from that cat, if you call it that, your losses are, I don't know, $6.7 million or so, and I get a loss ratio of still pretty high, like over 45% for an attritional loss ratio. Is there something else that's sort of inflating that loss ratio
Let me answer that, Ron. I think if you're comparing us to other Florida property companies, you have to know that we have a slightly different mix. So I would say that our homeowner's property, I think you're looking at from a gross of, and let's say gross loss in LAE, high 20s, perhaps a 28%. However, after deducting the reinsurance, well, let's just say for easy math, reinsurance is 50%. So really you could double that up to, let's say, 56% around those lines. That is not unusual in the industry. What we have that's different is we have our liability line. Our liability line is not heavy on reinsurance where we're giving up 50% of our premium. So you're seeing that our liability line, let's just say that it's going to run 55 to 60, that would pull up the average on our loss LAE.
Thanks a lot for the help on the mix. I did not appreciate that.
Okay. And also, just on a much smaller scale, we do have automobile as well, private passenger and commercial. And once again, that's not heavy cat excessive loss driven.
Okay. So if I look at the quarterly gross written premiums of $33 million, what's the approximate split of those three lines, homeowners, GL, and auto?
In terms of our in-force, homeowners, you're talking north of $90 million. GL, you're talking about $10 million. We have flood, which is under Allied. That's about $4 million. It's about $5 million right now. Auto, you're looking at about $1 million. Ballpark.
Okay. So your mix is slightly different. And then my last question, I think, again, Michael, in answering another question, talked about – can you hear me okay?
Yeah, I'll go ahead.
Okay. I think Michael mentioned $40 million of sort of private reinsurance and Florida cat fund reinsurance expense annually,
yes.
10 a quarter. And I just the second quarter obviously still has the prior year's reinsurance program showing up as the $11.7 million. So has your reinsurance rate gone down? Has the program structure changed that much that we're sort of going from a quarterly run rate of 11.7 to 10?
Well, where we're at right now is, in terms of the reinsurance, it's fairly consistent, and I'm overly simplifying it when I say $40 million equals $10 million a quarter. To be more technical, I mean, Pete can go in much more detail on how he cedes off the reinsurance on a quarterly basis, but what we put out in our press release and our 8K on our reinsurance program is that that comes in at $40.7 million. So last year, I don't recall with the adjustment, it was pretty consistent with that, but we have other reinsurance as well because we do have reinsurance on our auto program. We do have it on our GL. We have some excess of loss
costs on our where we seed off premiums for, let's just say if it's a fire or it's a big liability claim, things like that.
This is Pete. We also, what you're also seeing in that line is we write flood insurance, and the flood insurance is all seeded off, and then we take a 5% commission.
Yeah, basically the profit on that is about 5% after we pay. We have a TPA, which is NFS, that handles that. And then also after we pay our retailers, there's about $5 million. I think the flood book's around $4.8 million.
So the number you see there is not pure catastrophe reinsurance.
For homeowners, right.
There's other stuff in that in the actual number that you're seeing. When Mike threw out the $40 million, that was specifically just for CAT.
Gotcha. And is flood, and is the ceded flood premium showing up in that, second quarter, $11.7 million, is there a flood ceded premium? Oh, I see. Okay.
Yes.
Thanks, guys. I appreciate the help.
No problem. Thank you.
Thank you. Our next question comes from Casey Alexander from Guilford Securities.
Hi, Casey.
Hi. Sorry. And most of my other questions you already got to. Particularly, I was going to ask if you were considering participating in any more depopulation events from citizens. But my other question is, you know, it does seem as though that some rationality has returned to the market after years of an irrational underwriting environment. And as you know, when Citizens made it somewhat irrational, some of the larger national competitors withdrew, for all intents and purposes, from the market. Have you seen any inkling of a return from some of the larger competitors to the market now that it's more rational?
I have not seen anything to that effect. And when you see that these big boys were in the news recently as they're trying to get rate, I can't speak for them, but I think that they have opportunities in 50 states, and Florida can be a bit problematic from them, is what they've said in the past. I have not seen anything saying that they're coming back to this marketplace. But what we're seeing is the majority of this market is by Florida domestics, like companies like ourselves.
Right. Okay, great. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Our next question comes from Brad Nelson, private investor.
Hi, I'm sorry. Was that Rod?
How you doing? Was that Rod or Brad?
Brad.
I'm sorry. Thank you.
Nice quarter, and more so, congrats on really over the last whatever two or three or even maybe a little more than that years turning the ship around, and also thanks for having these conference calls in both good and bad times.
Sure.
Even though you're not exactly a big company, but so I appreciate that. I apologize for my ignorance on this. The first caller, I think, was a Guilford analyst, and you and him were discussing something regarding the CGL and property lines, and you don't have to explain that to me. I just want to confirm that whatever happened there was basically a wash effect and had no net effect on any bottom line, virtually no net effect on anything to do with the bottom line CGL and...
Yes, this is Pete. This is Brad, this is Pete. Exactly. It had no net effect on earnings because...
Okay, great.
Yes, we just removed it.
I think you don't have to explain. Okay. I mean, I'll take more of a look at it, but I don't expect you to give me a lesson in everything right now.
Okay.
But anyway, that's it. So thanks a lot, and congrats on the quarter.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Our next question comes from Lee Matheson from Broadview Capital.
Hi, Lee. How you doing?
I'm good, guys. Thanks, guys. How are you?
Good. Great. Thanks.
Good quarter. Just a quick question on the loss expense in the quarter. How much of it was current period versus prior year development?
Go ahead.
I would say that the losses actually paid. The book we've shown over the last, I think now, Lee, 14, 15 months, no development in prior years, meaning that whatever was paid out was previously flat.
Okay.
Right. Previously reserved for. Right.
And then the $400,000 of CAT losses in the quarter.
That's a ballpark.
That's a pretty good ballpark, actually.
Yeah. Okay.
But, yeah.
Okay. And again, regarding the reinsurance ceding on the homeowners program, just a rough, the back of the envelope is sort of $28 million of of gross premium written and about 10 ceded under the reinsurance program, which is a much lower ratio than historic. Is that kind of where we should expect it?
I would say that you can anticipate us being in the low, perhaps to the mid 40s. There's a lot of variables in that, but it's taken a considerable amount of effort on our part, not only from an underwriting perspective, but also with the rate adequacy that has moved through our book over the last 2 to 3 years. It seems like it moves through painfully slow, how we have to earn out the premium. But I think that as we sit here today, I don't see any volatility in the reinsurance market on a go-forward basis. Things could change, but I think that the Florida market is much more stable, and I think the reinsurance market is much more stable.
Okay, so from a pure operating standpoint, if we back up the $200,000 of realized losses and the $400,000 or thereabouts of cat losses, we're sort of talking pre-tax income in the almost in the $3 million range for the quarter?
I don't know. I mean, you just wiped off $600,000. I mean, you know, $2 million,
yeah.
Maybe, you know, $2 million. I don't know. It's hard to annualize that. But, you know, we have, as far as the cats, you know, they come. But you're always going to have, you know, with the realized investment gains or losses, I mean, that's going to fluctuate from quarter to quarter. So
yeah, we're just trying to pull those out to get a sense of your really, you know, your operating to give you, you know, a more recurring number, I guess. So if we strip that out, it's obviously a very strong quarter.
Well, if you strip those out, you're at $2 million.
Right. Okay. Yeah. Of net.
Net.
Yeah. $3 million pre-tax and
right.
And $2 million net.
So
we're really starting to see book value grow, and obviously at gross premiums to tangible book of about 2, you've got the ability to accelerate here. So, you know, good to see. In terms of taking OPEX out, I think somebody asked previously, but you know, is there anything material to come out
in the quarter? There was no material impact on our financials. Is that what you're asking?
Yeah, just in terms of anything else you guys have to go in terms of pulling OPEX down.
No, I think that you're not seeing anything unusual in the quarter, and I think you're seeing us. Our fixed expenses are fixed, and as we continue to grow, and you can see we're growing, that those variable expenses are leading to much more profitable business. So,
okay. And you guys gonna? I guess I can wait for the queue. But what was the average homeowner's policy premium in the quarter?
You know, it's been relatively flat, which is a bit interesting, but over the last couple of years, it's been relatively flat at about $1,800, but there's a reason for that. Our average non-tri is $1,400, and our average tri-county is about $2,700, but
okay.
The reason why you're seeing that it's remained flat over the last 2 to 3 years has been our shift, where you've seen perhaps 50% of our book in Tri-County, now you're seeing we're at about 24% of Tri-County. So it's really just a shift in the book.
And okay, Lee, I want to add something. You know, as Mike said, and I think we said this two years ago almost, when we were getting questioned on why we're writing so few policies. And, you know, we've gone from 43.7 to 52.9, and relatively without adding additional staff. I mean, when I say relatively, we might have added one or two to the headcount, but
yep.
the factory is built, and we can continue writing more policies while maintaining a fairly fixed headcount.
And to get the 24% Tri-County on the 52 and change that you reported, we're talking sort of 12,700 Tri-County policies, which is actually down 1,000 quarter over quarter. So you're still actively running that book down.
Well, we're not writing much business in Tri-County, and that's intentionally occurring. And then also we're growing non-tri. So I don't think you're going to see that. We're comfortable where we're at on Tri-County.
Okay. And then what did you guys spend on in the quarter on policy acquisition costs?
Hold on one second. I will tell you. We spent in the quarter approximately $3 million.
That was the amortization of it, or that was the actual cash expense?
Oh, the cash. I don't have. I can get you that. I don't have.
Okay, no, no problem. Okay.
That was the amortization
it didn't really grow year over year. The amortization of acquisition costs, which given the strength in the policy count, I would expect you to have obviously greater cash costs in that regard this quarter.
You know, just a rough number for you. If we wrote $30 million in the quarter, we are on our homeowners. We're averaging at about 11%. So you could say it's about $3.3 million from a gross actual cash
perfect
out the door.
Right.
There's other variables on that though, because it depends on how the insured pays and things like that.
But Lee, if you want to talk about that offline, I can give you the exact numbers.
Sure, I'll circle back with you tomorrow.
Okay.
Okay. Thanks, guys.
Thank you.
Thank you again, ladies and gentlemen. If you'd like to ask a question, please press star, then one on your touch-tone telephone. Again, if you have a question, please press star, then one.
All right. Well, with that, we'll go ahead and wrap it up. It looks like we handled all the questions, and we always enjoy getting the information out there, and things are going well for us, and we're always available if any other questions come up. Our contact information is on the press release. Thank you.
Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for participating in today's conference. This concludes our program. You may all disconnect and have a wonderful day.